Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 18, Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real weird sisters please stand up?
We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the weird sisters, we're the real weird sisters. All you other weird sisters are fine, but not the victors. Will the real weird sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Martha.
And I'm Alice.
And today we're here to talk about Chapter 18 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. But before we do that, we teased this on last week's episode. We do have a very special announcement to make, and now is our opportunity to do so, Alice.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I'm sure all of our listeners have just been listening, waiting for this moment. That's the only reason they're tuning in.
Right, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sorry that you've had to be on the edge of your seats all week. I know you've been waiting and waiting for this super special announcement for us to make. But now is the time to sit back down and relax, because we are making the announcement now. Yeah, so a couple months back, we did release a listener feedback survey where we got a lot of feedback from our listeners in terms of things they like about the show, things you maybe want to see improved, and general comments about the show. And one of the things that we sort of wanted to test the waters about during that feedback survey was the idea of doing a financial support platform for the podcast, because, of course, podcasting isn't free for us, and it is free for our listeners, and we love podcasting so much, but sometimes it can be a big time commitment. So we have decided to give our listeners the opportunity to potentially financially support us if they choose to do so.
Yeah, and just the first thing we want to note is that we're not going to be charging for shows. Our shows are still going to remain free. All of our normal content, our book club shows, and our special topics are going to still be free for everyone. So there's not a pressure on you that you have to contribute. This is for people who really want to support us. And we don't want you to feel, guilty or burdened if you're not able to do so at this time, or that you really don't feel like you can. So, I mean, we're not going to be upset with you if you can, but we'll be really happy, obviously, if you are able to contribute, at any level at this point.
Of course, yeah. So we've had the show going for about a year now. We celebrated our year anniversary last month, and we've had such a great time doing the show for the last year. We've released how many episodes? 56, something like that.
No, I think we're up to about 66 episodes.
Oh, 66 episodes in the last year, and it's been so much fun. I mean, when we started the podcast, I had no idea what it was going to grow into. I mean, I expected to have fun, but I didn't expect to have nearly as much fun as we've had. And
yeah.
I mean, we created a show where we definitely have a long time to go before we're to the end of the podcast. And we have four books to go after this one, and they are all like twice as long as the first two books or more. So
right. And I feel like it's also like we have a lot of potential to keep this going even after the book club episodes are done. So I think it's about time that we looked into ways to make it more sustainable, because like you said, it's a big time commitment for us. I know Martha edits most of the shows, and that takes, several hours a week. And then all the posting stuff takes a while. There's a lot that goes into it behind the scenes. And then we do put in our own money as well, just to have website hosting fees and some of our podcasting equipment, like microphones, that type of thing. So we have invested some of our own money in it too. And that's one of the reasons that we're looking to make it more sustainable long term.
Exactly, because we love doing the show, but of course it's not either of our full-time jobs. So that's the reason that we're doing this. And of course, like Alice said, we're going to keep all our normal content free. We're both big podcast listeners ourselves, so of course we know how important that is to make sure that all the normal content will remain free for our listeners. And of course, we completely understand not everybody can support us. But for as little as $1 a month, you can support us. And we'd appreciate, of course, any kind of support. Of course, we already appreciate just, the moral support that we have in our listeners. But
yeah. And I think that's one of the things that we've learned a lot in the first year is that, we've had really great listeners that have been very willing to support us all along the way. So we're really grateful for that. And just like with the iTunes reviews, we've had, really great turnout for that, and we've had lots of interactions on our Facebook page, and it's been really fun. So when we were looking into how we wanted to do this, we kind of thought, like, well, what is a way that we can foster more connections with our listeners and then at the same time get something in return so that we can invest that back into the podcast? And so we looked into a couple of different platforms, and we decided to go with Patreon, which probably a lot of the listeners are familiar with, but maybe not all of them are. So I just, Martha, why don't you tell them a little bit about Patreon?
Right. So we first heard about Patreon. We're both supporters of the podcast. Rob has a podcast, which I'm sure we have a lot of overlap in our listeners with that. And Patreon is a website that allows listeners to support a podcast or any kind of artistic creation, creativity platform at different levels. And our first level, like I mentioned, is the $1 a month level, and then goes up to $5, then $10, then $20. And of course, it's monthly payments, and you get certain rewards at each level. And it goes into us trying to improve the podcast, continuing to make the podcast even better as we go into the future.
Yeah, so I think like what you were saying about the levels with Patreon, that's one of the things that makes Patreon unique, whereas with a Kickstarter, you can get a reward right off, and that's with levels, but the Patreon does ask for a monthly contribution, so it's smaller amounts, but per month, and at each level, you'll get different incentives. So our $1 level is going to be a postcard that you'll receive from us. We'll write you a handwritten message on there. And then at the $5 level, that's where the rewards really start to pick up. So you'll get access into our Facebook group, which we're going to be creating for patrons only. In the Facebook group, we're going to really try to have a lot of like really fun conversations. We're planning on doing various topics. It's going to be, I would say, mostly Harry Potter related, but also a place for you to just get to know some of our other listeners on a more personal level.
Right. That's kind of one of the reasons that we wanted to start this in the first place, is I know that both of us have wanted to interact with our listeners more than we have, but it's something that oftentimes we don't necessarily find the time to do so. And I think with this patron Facebook group, we'll have more of an incentive to do that, and more accessible platform to do that as well. So that's something that I'm really excited about.
Yeah. One of the other big incentives you'll get at the $5 level is access to a new bonus show. And that's going to be where we take listener questions, and they can be Harry Potter related or not. And this is going to be the only show that we're going to be offering exclusively to patrons. And all the other stuff, like we said, is going to remain available for everyone else. But this one will be a way for us to kind of connect with our patron listeners on a different level.
Right. And I'm really also excited about doing that. I think it's definitely... I'm excited for the opportunity for our listeners to get to know us more, not just as Harry Potter podcasters, but also just as people as well. So I think this will be a good way to do that, not just in the Facebook group, but also in that monthly show. And then as we get further up in the levels, it's more merchandise like t-shirts, mugs, stuff like that. But you can find all of that on the website. There's all the different levels, and then also our goals that we have, which I think we definitely should mention what our first goal is, because it involves Alice potentially watching a Harry Potter musical for the first time.
Yeah, so with the levels, it's going to be sort of an individual incentive for contributing to the show, but for the goals, that's going to be on a group level. So the first goal that we're going to have is $500 a month, and once we reach that level, it's kind of like for the greater good. Everybody's contributing, and you all will get the reward of I will watch a Harry Potter musical, and we will do a reaction show to that.
I know that's and something it will be at long last to do that after like a year and a half of the podcast, probably.
Right. Well, and like I said, it's kind of, like I said, for the greater good. So it's not just people who contribute to that will be able to listen to it. It's any, like, once we reach the $500 level, everyone will get access to that show.
Right. So I'm excited for when that day comes. Hopefully it will come, because I feel like I've just been having the worst luck in trying to convince Alice to watch this Harry Potter musical. But I mean, maybe this is what will push her over the edge, hopefully. It is a commitment that you're making, right, Alice?
It is. It is definitely a commitment. Once we get to $500 a month, I will watch the show as quickly as I can. So, I mean, like within a week. And then we will do our reaction show.
Yes, and we're going to have more goals with more incentives for the entire listener audience as well. But you can find all of that, again, on the website. So, Alice, can you tell our listeners where to find this in case they're interested in supporting us?
Yeah, so we're going to have two different ways to access it. The first is just go to our website, which is realweirdsisters.com. And we have a tab on that website. It says Become a Patron. So just click on that, and that will lead you right to our Patreon website. The other way is to just go directly to our Patreon website. So that is patreon.com. So that's patreon.com/realweirdsisters. So both are pretty simple. You can do either. You're going to get to that website either way. And then once you're on there, you'll see the list of all of our levels and all of our goals, and you'll see a little welcome message, a little bit about the show. You know, in case you're maybe still on the fence after listening to us talk about it, you can kind of go over the information if you prefer to read it. But yeah, it's all on there.
Right. So thanks so much for bearing with us during that little announcement. We're both very excited to be launching this, just to see how the podcast can continue to grow and improve in the coming years. So thanks for bearing with us for that. And thanks for your consideration of supporting us. Again, if you can't, we totally understand, but we appreciate our listeners either way.
Yeah, definitely. That's like our main message today is, you know, we're really grateful for the year we've had recording already. We're really grateful for anyone's support moving forward. And we've really enjoyed getting to hear from all of our listeners over the last year.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, with that being said, it's probably time that we get into talking about this chapter. What do you say, Alice?
Yeah, sounds good. I just wanted to say, like, I was really surprised by this chapter, mostly about how short it was.
Yeah, it's only 8 pages, and it is very, very short. I think it's the shortest we've had in this book, at least. I think it's hard to... both of us had forgotten about this chapter being so short because all of this happens in one setting. All of these big events that happen at the end of the book kind of get meshed together into one big thing. So it's hard to remember that it's divided into so many chapters.
No, I kind of wonder why it's done that way. Like, I think maybe it originally was written together with the next chapter, but then they were like, well, this is too long. We need to have a break here.
That could be, because I know the next one is pretty long, and it's all about actually Peter transforming into, or Scabbers transforming into Peter Pettigrew. So that's the main thing that happens in that next chapter. But I feel like actually this one might be better as part of, I don't know, because I mean, the last chapter we both loved so much. We had a really great discussion about it and how artfully done it was, and that cliffhanger at the end of saying that Scabbers is Peter Pettigrew is so exciting. And then this one's kind of just like feels like a middle chapter because we have this big reveal, but Peter doesn't actually become Peter in this chapter. And basically we just get the backstory.
Yeah, I know. We keep on thinking like, oh, next chapter is it. We're going to get into the meat of this story. And then it just every week keeps getting postponed a little bit, it seems like.
But. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, this chapter... Still, we get some really good information. It's just not any actual action.
Right, exactly.
But I really enjoyed the chapter, other than it being so short. I thought that it was a really good continuation of the previous chapter. It starts out just immediately their reactions to hearing that Lupin and Black believe that Scabbers is Peter Pettigrew. Ron voices what Harry was thinking. You're both mental.
Yeah, I guess that's exactly what Harry was thinking. I don't know. I was actually listening to this chapter on audiobook, and when it said, then Ron voiced what Harry was thinking, and I didn't remember the exact wording of what was about to come, so I did not predict that Harry was thinking, you're both mental, but I guess maybe that's because I'm not British.
Right. You thought Harry was thinking you're both crazy.
Yeah, probably that.
But yeah, I mean, putting yourself into Harry and Ron and Hermione's shoes, I definitely think I would be thinking the same thing, that these two, I mean, Lupin, who we've trusted the whole book, all of a sudden is just, like, totally on the same page as this escaped criminal who looks extremely creepy and extremely deranged as well.
Yeah, he's
just spouting nonsense, basically.
Yeah, Sirius is growling and his yellow teeth are bared, and he's not even a dog right now.
I know, he's acting really dog-like. Speaking of that, the picture of the chapter art for this one is a picture of Snuffles, right?
Okay, I was just looking at that, and I think it is a picture of Mooney.
Yeah, okay, that's what I go back and forth on.
It looks very more like wolfish. A wolf to me. Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't have any transformation of any of the animals in this chapter, so it's kind of a weird choice for chapter art, I thought.
Well, they kind of tell the story
yeah.
a little bit.
That's true. And this, I don't know, maybe Mary Grand Pré has a soft spot for wolves or something, because this wolf has a pretty friendly look on his face.
Well, it's Lupin. It's not an actual...
Well, yeah, but it doesn't look like the werewolf in the movie.
That's true. Thank goodness. I don't know where whoever came up with the concept art for the werewolf in the movie, I don't know what kind of wolves they've ever seen in their life before. Well, that's certainly not how I picture a wolf.
I know that you hate the werewolf in the movie, and I'm not a big fan either, but I do have to say that it looks a lot like werewolves usually look in movies. Like, werewolves don't look like wolves, usually.
See, that's the thing that I get kind of, like, frustrated by, because in my head, whenever I, you know, when I was a kid, I would always picture, like, a werewolf, it's a person who becomes a wolf.
Yeah, they don't become a werewolf.
I don't think it has to look different than, I don't know.
I know, I feel
Maybe
the same
I'm alone
way.
In this.
No, I feel the same way, actually, and I think we've discussed this, probably not on the podcast before, but I don't know, I just always... Maybe it's because we never really read the, like, actual mythology behind werewolves and stuff like that. We never really got into that kind of thing. But I always thought of a werewolf as, like, a person who becomes a wolf, not a person who becomes a werewolf. Like, a werewolf is just a wolf, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, and it makes sense to me, too, because, I mean, it says, like, when Lupin would take the potion, he becomes just a harmless wolf.
Yeah.
And, like, a werewolf... can sort of, I feel like a werewolf can, like, mate with a normal wolf, can't it?
Yeah, they can.
So, doesn't that mean you have to be, like, the same species?
Maybe it's just that a werewolf usually is, like, deranged and, like, has no sense of boundaries.
Yeah, well, it could
anything.
Be, like, just, like, a rabid-looking wolf.
Right, I think that's more, like, what it should look like. And maybe that's not what, like, the concept art of the movie's going for.
Not like a... I don't even know what that thing looks like, an alien.
Like, it's like kind of greyhound-like in terms of its, like, long legs and extremely, like, bony body.
Well, and then he walks on two legs.
Yeah, that's the weirdest
part.
That
bothers me, too.
Yeah, I don't know. But I just wanted to bring that up because I knew that you would get fired up about the movie.
And he has no fur, he just is, like, skin.
Yeah.
And, like, some random hairs.
Yeah, he's not...
Like cilia.
Not a sight for sore eyes.
He is a sight for sore eyes.
No, because he would make your eyes sorer.
That's true, but I think that's what that expression is used as.
No, you say, aren't you a sight for sore eyes? It makes my eyes feel better.
Okay, maybe you're right.
But, yeah, I agree. I think about that phrase sometimes and get confused, so I could be wrong. But anyway, are we in agreement then that the picture is of Mooney?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because it doesn't really look like how I'd picture Snuffles to be.
Well, okay, but my thing is kind of, I actually have gone back and forth on whether that's Mooney or Padfoot. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of have made Padfoot look like that in my mind.
Yeah, that's I don't know, it's confusing. But anyway, so Black or Sirius is acting pretty weird in the scene. We talked a lot about it in the last chapter about how he kind of isn't doing himself any favors in terms of how crazy he's acting. But he's like...
Yeah, he's just like throws himself at little Peter Pettigrew, who's still a rat at this point.
Yeah, he literally throws himself at Ron because Ron is holding Scabbers. It says Ron yelled with pain as Black's weight fell on his broken leg. Pretty intense.
I picture him kind of like when I go chasing after a cat and I'm like diving to get the cat.
Whoa, okay. Would you fall on someone's broken leg to get the cat?
There's a lot of things I would do to get a cat.
Well, but the cat...
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I think Black is... okay, and it's funny because I realize, like, that we're both kind of going between saying Black and saying Sirius.
I know. Well, we're kind of just saying whatever it says in the text, which usually it's Black in this case. But, yeah, I know. We want to call him Sirius because we know he's a friend. But, you know, that's one other thing that always kind of I've thought about in this book is how Lupin is always Lupin, like... In Harry's mind, or in the way that J.K. Rowling writes him, but of course it's Harry's mind who's basically thinking about these characters that way. So Lupin's always Lupin. He never thinks of him as Remus. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Well, I think that's because he's a professor.
Yeah, but he never even thinks of him as Professor Lupin. He's always just Lupin,
yeah,
Harry.
Yeah, that's true. But I just think, like, in my mind, like, even now that I work at a school and stuff, like, I feel like if I went to my high school and if I worked at my old high school, it would be pretty difficult for me to switch over to calling teachers by their first name.
Yeah, that's true. But do you think of...
Versus in this setting, like, I think the Black to Sirius is, you know, really a mark of how Harry's opinion on him changes.
Okay, that makes more sense, because with Lupin, it's more of a respect thing that you don't want to go from... Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I just think it's kind of weird that it's never Professor Lupin in Harry's mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, like, a couple times, but it's almost always just Lupin.
Well, maybe he's, like, that cool gym teacher who you only ever call by their last name, not their Mr. Whatever.
We've all had that cool gym teacher.
Yeah, got tons of those.
Love gym teachers.
Well, you know how that is with gym teachers. Sometimes they'll you know, they don't say Mr. Whatever.
Yeah, or like if your last name is Fitzgerald and you're like, call me Fitz.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But apologies to any gym teacher listeners in the audience.
Now I work at a school, I actually really like all the gym teachers there. I just never had any gym teachers I had a few, but most of my gym teachers I had and as a student, I did not have a special connection with.
Yeah, me neither, because neither of us were star athletes, believe it or not.
I mean, we know a lot about sports, but we're not very good at them ourselves.
Right, we're like those people that know everything about it in theory, but just can't do it ourselves. Can't even joke about that. We know nothing about sports. But anyway, at least Lupin is a little bit more level-headed than Sirius is in this scene.
A lot more level-headed. He's like trying to restrain Black, and he says, like, they've got a right to know. And so he's like, okay, we're not going to just kill this rat without saying anything. And he says, like, there's parts I don't even understand.
Right, that's a good, like, I think the part that makes Sirius come back to Earth a little bit is saying that Sirius owes Harry the truth. But it's a really good point that even Lupin doesn't really get the whole story. He knows very little of it, actually. He's mostly just guessed most of it.
Yeah, and so when I read that sentence, I read it as, there are parts of it even I don't understand. But when Jim Dale read it out, he was like, there are parts of it even I don't understand.
Oh, no, it's even I don't understand.
I know.
Another phonetic discussion that we can have here. Even I don't understand or even I don't understand.
It's like, there are parts of it even I don't understand. Or I can't even do it.
And we should go to a quiet room to hear this.
We should. Or to the quiet room.
Right. But so then I think it is telling how Black finally decides to calm down when he hears that that he owes Harry the truth, and because he knows that that's true.
Yeah, and I think he started to realize, like, I guess Harry's the reason that he even broke out of Azkaban was because he wanted to protect Harry. He knew that Pettigrew was in the same place as him.
Exactly.
So he kind of, maybe this is a callback for him, like, okay, yes, this is the reason why I'm here. Like, I need to really look out for Harry in this situation, not just, like, take vengeance for James.
Yeah, exactly. So then it's funny, the Scabbers is squealing like a piglet. Sad, but
it's not sad, that's actually really funny.
Yeah, it actually is. I'm impressed that Ron's able to hold on to him for so long, actually.
What do you think? How do you picture that to sound, Martha? I had no idea if you would, like, come up with something good for that, but that was perfect.
Oh, thank you. That's just what I do, Alice. I surprise even myself sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Ron's holding on tight to Scabbers, and Black is still acting pretty crazy. He's like, make it quick, Remus. I want to commit the murder I was imprisoned for. Okay, creeper. Then Ron kind of has a weird burst of energy. He tries to take off. He's like, I've had enough of this. I'm off. He tries to heave himself up on his good leg.
Yeah, this is typical Ron.
I know, it really is. But then Lupin points his wand at him, and he's like, no, you're not going anywhere.
Right.
That Lupin, like, Lupin is so weird how he is so calm and, like, so cool in the way he speaks about everything in this scene. He's just like, okay, Ron, you'll hear me out. Pointing his wand at Ron. He goes, just keep a tight hold on Peter while you listen.
And I feel like that was, like, the exact wrong thing to say, because then Ron's just like, it's like a trigger for Ron.
Exactly.
Like, he's not Peter, he's Scabbers, you psycho.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like, I mean, it's also weird how he's calling him Peter, not just, like, the rat. Like, he could have just said the rat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I guess for him, like, he is so familiar with that particular rat that it's hard for him to just... It's kind of like how Harry... It's hard for Harry to call Lupin Remus. It's hard for him to call him the rat.
Huh, well, maybe. Then,
a little bit of a stretch.
So then Harry basically, he decides to turn to Lupin and try to get the story because he has trusted Lupin up until this point. And I think he is trying to, he really hopes that he can get a real story out of Lupin that's believable.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a natural instinct too. Like, he has this relationship with Lupin where he feels like, you know, he is this trusted figure, and so he wants to cling on to the hope that he really can continue to trust him.
Yeah, I think so too. So then Harry and Ron are still not believing this at all. They're like, think that they're out of their minds. So because Harry asks Lupin, like, how did there were witnesses who saw Peter Pettigrew die. And Black and Lupin just say, oh, that was not real. People thought that that's what they saw. But then Lupin says the line that we thought that he doesn't say in the book. Last episode, we thought that this was just in the movie. But Lupin does indeed say, the Marauder's map never lies.
Oh, okay. So, but he doesn't quite say it in that same tone that he says it in the movie.
The map never lies, Harry. But yeah, I don't think, because we're kind of saying, like, if he says that, it's a little bit arrogant to say since he is one of the creators of the map. But I mean, it's true, though.
Yeah.
The map does never lie.
True. So, I mean, it's good that he points that out, because then I think that partially later on, like, there's some situations when Harry will be looking at the map and stuff, and that kind of is, it's important that we know that the map does never lie.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be more arrogant for Lupin to say, like, the map never makes a mistake, instead of the map never lies, because...
That's true. That's a really interesting, like, word choice here.
Because lying would be more like it's intentional. Yeah. So Harry and Ron both think that they're still crazy. It says, Azkaban must have unhinged Black after all. But why was Lupin playing along with him? Playing along. So then Hermione kind of steps in as the voice of reason. And she says in a trembling, would-be calm sort of voice. She says that it can't be true because she's looked at the registration of animagi in Britain in the last 100 years, and there's only been 7, and Pettigrew was not one of them.
Yeah, that's one of those moments where you're like, wow, Hermione, maybe get a life.
I was going to say, it's more like, wow, Hermione, you are really devoted to your work.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I do think it's kind of crazy that there's only been 7 registered ones, and then here's 3 that we know of that are unregistered, and then also Rita Skeeter is one that we know of that's unregistered. So you have to start thinking, like, how many people are really out there who have not registered?
Yeah, I know. I mean, we know of 4 unregistered animagi in the last, like, 20 years, let alone the last 100 years. So you've got to think that there's more, especially since these 3 registered, or not registered, but became animagi at the age of 15.
Yeah, and I mean, I know they said it was a lot of work, but, like, still.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they're 15. They started when they were 12.
And one of them is Peter Pettigrew, who's kind of a dumb, like, he's not really too bright.
I know. True. I mean, it says they do say that they really had to help him, especially to.
Yeah, but you'd think that some other dumb people could have had help from other people as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's not like Rita Skeeter is the smartest person on earth.
No, I think she's really wily, though.
That's true.
So she
really, James and Sirius—they're not that smart either, are they?
That's what it says. They're the cleverest wizards and cleverest students at Hogwarts during that time.
So then, what happened to Harry that he didn't inherit any of that?
Harry's really smart. I don't.
He's smart enough. I would say he's like a B student.
Well, yeah, but smart and grades are not the same thing.
That's true.
And I don't think that Lupin is saying that Sirius and James have the highest marks of any students in the school. He says they're the cleverest.
That's true. When I think of Harry, I think of a lot of traits before I think of smart.
Well, but
I think he is, like, okay, he does have good problem-solving skills. He's not dumb. I don't think Harry's dumb by any means, but, like, the fact that his father was supposedly one of the cleverest students that Hogwarts has ever seen.
Well,
I don't know. I guess Harry is exceptional in a lot of ways, but
exactly. I mean, Harry does what's extremely exceptional as a third year in creating a Patronus, which is what we see in this book, of course. And that's like, that's a very bright thing. I think clever is a very different word from smart. And I think
that's
especially
true.
You and I, as being big school, like obsessed with grades and stuff like that, we often think of smart as just in terms of a report card. And I agree that Harry's report card probably isn't super reflective of intelligence, but that doesn't mean that he isn't an intelligent person.
That's true. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. It just strikes me as a little odd that he was supposedly this, like, genius.
Yeah, I think it's more, yeah, clever. I don't know.
He's also, I feel like they're just witty and, like, able to come up with, like, hijinks, kind of in a Fred and George type
right.
way.
Well, like Fred and George, who are able to come up with these really crazy, ingenious inventions that a lot of students wouldn't be able to come up with. James and Sirius, when they set their minds to something, they're able to accomplish things that students or teenagers normally would not be able to do. I think it's
a very similar
comparison. I mean, of course, Fred and George did not do well in school either.
Yeah. And I think for them, it was kind of a choice.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think for Harry that it's a choice of what grades he gets exactly.
Probably not, but...
Well, I guess he could
really
invest
that
more
hard.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't spend that much time on school, so...
No, he spends very little time on school, actually.
He and Ron just kind of goof off.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so there, Lupin starts, before we even get to the explanation of the three unregistered animagi, Lupin starts talking about him being a werewolf, and we've already had the reveal in the previous chapter, but this is a little bit more backstory than we got in the last one. He talks about how he didn't think he'd ever be able to go to school, but luckily Dumbledore became headmaster, like, right before he was coming to Hogwarts.
I know, and it's kind of crazy. I mean, I guess it makes sense. It's kind of crazy, though, that Dumbledore... You kind of feel like he's been headmaster forever. And we obviously know that he wasn't headmaster when Tom Riddle was in school.
Right.
So it makes some sense. But, like, remember, like, Lupin and, you know, James and all them, they were not that much older. Like, they're not that much older than Harry. I mean, that's like they were at school about 20 years before.
I know. So it's weird because Dumbledore became headmaster, I think, in the 60s or 70s, something like that.
I don't remember the exact timeline.
That,
you know, that's
that
not
would be
really
right.
A strong suit.
Yeah, I know. That would be right, though, because the fight with Grindelwald was 45, obviously, and then Tom Riddle was after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's right. This is taking place in the mid-90s, and Harry's parents and Lupin and Sirius were at school 20 years before that. So
yeah.
That would be the mid-70s, so Dumbledore probably became headmaster around 1970, about 25 years after his fight with Grindelwald. That seems right.
Well, and he was a teacher at
right.
Hogwarts for a long time before that, so
exactly.
That kind of does make sense.
Yeah, so I'm glad that we worked that out. So then he says that the Whomping Willow was planted because he came to Hogwarts, and he explains the tunnel and the house that were built for his use. It says Harry couldn't see where this story was going. Just trust him. Like, I mean, I know you don't need to trust Lupin completely, but he probably has a point to telling this long story. Harry's like, is he just stalling?
Yeah, that does not seem likely, Harry.
Yeah, I don't think so. So then Lupin's talking more about this story, and it says the only sound apart from Lupin's voice was Scabbers' frightened squeaking. It doesn't say squealing this time, but...
So what would the squeaking sound like? you'd think he would maybe want to, like, go silent. Yeah. And then just, like, slip away while no one's paying attention to him, instead of, like, constantly chirping.
Well, notice that Lupin doesn't say that, that's Pettigrew was one of the cleverest students.
True.
So, now it says, the house has been silent for years, but the villagers still don't dare approach the Shrieking Shack, which is interesting.
Yeah. I guess it makes sense. I mean, usually, like, haunted house type things are usually, you know, for years. I mean, it's been usually years since there's been anyone who's said anything about it.
It is kind of weird, though, that the Shrieking Shack has only been around for about 30 years.
Yeah, because you'd think that the villagers would be like, why did this house pop up out of nowhere?
Yeah, exactly.
And then all of a sudden it's super haunted.
Yeah, I know, because you normally when you think of a haunted house, it's like super old.
Yeah.
But this is like 25 years old.
You know, something else I got to thinking about was how it was talking about all the villagers of Hogsmeade and just thinking about the people who live in Hogsmeade and then thinking about how we've never met anyone who's at Hogwarts who, like, grew up in Hogsmeade.
Yeah, no students who lived in Hogsmeade their whole life or anything. That's
like,
it.
On their Hogsmeade day, their parents signed their permission form and they just went to their house and, like,
I think
chilled out.
I think most of the people who live in Hogsmeade work in Hogsmeade.
So it's kind of just like a tourist community.
I think that seems right. So like,
but it's like the largest wizard
dwelling yeah.
All of England.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd think that there'd be more families there, but we don't ever actually even see the houses or anything. I think I always kind of thought that it was just like the like apartments above each shop and stuff was where people lived.
Kind of like a diagonally.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know.
Well, you'd think some of those workers would have kids.
You would think. I don't think any of them are married. Like, Madame Rose Murda, Madame Puttyfoot, those are bachelorettes.
There's a lot of jobs in the wizarding world where, like, once you marry, you're kind of, like, saddled to one location, and so you're probably, your dating life's not going to be off the charts.
Right, so, like, Hogsmeade employees really only have a couple people to choose from in terms of their potential soulmates.
Well, I guess they could find someone in Hogsmeade.
Who would, are you an Aberforth and Madame Puttyfoot shipper?
Ew, no. I don't think I'm going to ship Aberforth with anyone.
Aberforth and his goats?
Yeah, I wouldn't be shipping that personally, but I know that that has been a theory.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know. I think that it's mostly just employees of Hogsmeade who work there, who live there.
Madame Rose Murda and Hagrid.
Ooh.
Ta, Rose Murda.
That's what Hagrid would have to say that a lot if they were married.
Mm-hmm.
But that would not be a good couple, I don't think.
Hagrid thinks it would be.
He has Madame Maxime, Olympe.
Olympe.
And her big bones.
Yes, she has very big, she is big boned.
She has big bones. So then here, Lupin finally does explain that Sirius and James and Pettigrew transformed into the three animals. It says, I doubt whether any Hogwarts students ever found out more about the Hogwarts grounds and Hogsmeade than we did. And that's how we came to write the Marauder's Map and sign it with our nicknames.
Like, I still, this whole theory about the whole Marauder's Map thing is still a little bit far-fetched to me.
I agree. I mean, they don't get any explanation here about actually, like, how they made the map. Like, they just say
so
we
they
made
became,
it.
They became anime guy in their fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
So they really only had, like, two more years left at Hogwarts.
Right.
So, but supposedly in that time, they explored the Hogwarts grounds so thoroughly that they were able to, like seriously, they explored the Hogwarts grounds so much in just 2 years and wrote the Marauder's Map.
That is pretty impressive. I don't know. I agree. I think it's a little bit weird, and I don't really understand any of the magic behind the Marauder's Map, how it can be so, so intelligent.
I could see if it was just a map of Hogwarts.
Yeah, with all the secret passageways and stuff.
Yeah, like, all the secret passageways and, like, the kind of hidden rooms and that type of thing. But for it to then also include these all-knowing dots that
age with the school, like every time there's a new batch of students,
constantly upload, like updating, like no software update needed.
The Marauder's Map is like
real-time info from Google.
Yeah, it's like updating software update will be finished in 8 hours and 49 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems so
far-fetched.
I just don't know. I don't know.
I know.
Especially that they say they did it, like, after they became... I mean, if it was something they had been working on their entire 7 years at Hogwarts. But, like, when I think about how fast 2 years goes by, and, like, I don't know. That's not very much time.
Well, but I don't know. I agree. Like, 2 years is not a long time. But when you're in high school, I think that 2 years does feel like a long time.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it is longer than
it. I know. I'm saying it feels like longer, and I think that they probably had more free time to be able to just be working on this kind of thing. And like Fred and George, I mean, Fred and George create a whole, like, inventory for a store in their 2 years, like, after
their 5th find year. That a lot more believable, though.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of like, what do they pick? Like, what do these mischief makers pick as their passion? Like, Fred and George put so much time into making these weird treats and weird tricks and stuff like that. And the Marauders put all this time into making the map and, you know, adventuring around. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess if it's every single month that they're heading out to the Whomping Willow...
Yeah, and it's kind of weird. They say that they, like, plan their adventures and stuff, like, what they're going to do every time. They would sit down and plan their adventures for the next month.
Here's the... Let's plan out. We're going to just... This time we're going to go explore, like, this secret passage.
Yeah.
So we can add that to the map. I don't know.
Right, and it's a little bit weird because, like, they say that they calm Lupin down a little bit, but I don't think they can calm him down enough to just make him... go exploring, like, on a hike or something.
Well, he did go all over the grounds, and they say, like, that was super dangerous. He could have bitten someone.
Yeah, I thought that still haunts me.
I know. I just picture Lupin. He's so...
So heavy-hearted.
He is. Poor guy.
We laughed about them afterwards. We were young, thoughtless, carried away with our own cleverness.
So what's kind of crazy to think is... Yeah, I know, it's so, like, just, everything he says is with so much gravitas.
Yeah, it really is.
But it's kind of crazy, so, okay, we have this timeline of when they make the map, and how they became Animagus, or Animagi by the time they were, you know, 15. Then they make the map by the time that they're graduating from Hogwarts, so they're maybe 18 by the time they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Depending when their birthdays are. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think James's is in June, but that's all I know.
So they're 17 or 18.
Right.
So it's like 2.5 years maybe that they make the map and all this stuff. Also in this time, like, James and Lily are going to be getting married in like a year.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot, like, James has had enough time to have like a serious enough relationship with Lily.
Mm-hmm.
That's really only in his final year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because the memory of the memory that Harry sees in the Pensieve is from like the 6th year. It's the same age that Harry is.
Yeah, so and I think that they like get together when they're in their final year and then they get married and have Harry by the time they're like 20.
Well, but remember that everything's a lot more rushed because it's in the middle of the Wizarding War.
Yeah, so they're also, like, feeling like they're fighting.
In the order.
Yeah, like, there's just so much going on.
Everything is very rushed, and I do question, I always question why J.K. Rowling decided to make James and Lily so young when they had Harry. And I know it makes sense in some ways, thinking about, like, everything was a lot more, people wanted to get things done before Voldemort took over. But at the same time, like, we talked about the baby boom in terms of, like, babies being born after Harry.
Don't really see why James and Lily, like, why she didn't just make them like 25.
That would make a little bit more sense, or even like 23 or 22.
Yeah,
like 20 is so, like, that's 2 years after they graduate or finish at Hogwarts.
Well, is 20 when they have Harry or when they die?
I think 20 might be when they die.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just looking. I guess James Potter's birthday is actually in March. I don't know where I got.
So they have. So then, like, by the time they graduate, like, Lily is
when they die.
Okay, so they have Harry when they're 20.
Right. I think they get married when they're 19.
Yeah. I guess that sort of works with the timeline. It's so weird because I think, like, also my perspective has changed, like, reading this now versus when I was 11. I'm like, yeah, I mean, and I don't think I really knew how old they were supposed to be, but, like, you know, you pick somebody when you're a kid and you're reading this, like, a 20-year-old and a 40-year-old, pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, or even, like, a 30-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
But I just always pictured them, like, fairly, like, mature people at this point. You know, they're making these super selfless decisions to, like, sacrifice their life. And I'm not saying that a young parent wouldn't do that. I mean, I think they would as well. It just, they just seem like these, and I think it's partially Harry's perspective on them. Like, they just seem like these super, like,
cerebral figures.
Really, like, and, like, full-fledged adults. Yeah. You know, at age 20, I mean, there's still a lot of, there's still a lot of life experience that you haven't had.
Right. Very true. I mean, I'm 20.
You're going to be a very different person. You're going to be a very different person when you're 30 than when you're 20.
Of course, yeah. And I think it's the same thing. When we're reading these the first time, we're about the same age as Harry is when he's thinking about his parents. I mean, most people are in elementary school when they read Harry Potter the first time. So thinking about the age of James and Lily, like you said, 20 is really not... 20 just seems so far away and seems like such an old person to think of a 20-year-old, but...
Oh, yeah, I'll have 4 kids by the time I'm 20.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, getting married at 18, that doesn't seem weird at all, but I don't know. I think it's weird to think about it now, having that perspective.
Yeah, and so for me, like, when I'm now looking at it, too, like, when I'm reading this book, I had a real moment of realization. Like, I am really pretty close in age to... Lupin. Like, Sirius and Lupin.
Yeah,
like, that
4 years
is
younger
weird.
Than them.
I know. Aren't they, like, 33 in this?
I think they're 32. Oh, no, they're 33 or 34, yeah.
Yeah, they were, well, no, they're...
Because they're 21 years older
they're
than...
They're 20 years older than Harry. So yeah. They're 33 in this scene.
A couple of them are 34 because their birthdays are seriously.
I mean, I'm way closer in age to them than I am to Harry.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm right in the middle. Yeah. No, I'm closer to Harry. I'm so young.
So that's kind of a scary revelation when you realize, like, you are no longer, you know, supposed to be relating with the person that is the main subject of this book.
Mm-hmm. That does change it a lot. And it's interesting because I think even, I mean, it's not like this is your first time rereading since you were Harry's age, of course, like you've reread them many, many times. But I think at least for me, I'm thinking about it more as like this time because of the podcast, of course, like even though I reread this probably like a year ago and I'm only a year older, I'm thinking about it more and it becomes a little bit more weird to me because I'm analyzing it more than I have in the past.
Yes. And especially for me, like, having read this book when I'm 9 and now I'm, like, 27, it's weird to, I guess that's been a long time that I've been reading these books, and it's just weird when you realize you've shifted over and you're not really one of the kids anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that's weird to me is, like, you picture Sirius. He's had this absolutely tormented life, and he's just struggled. And then you realize he's 33.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's 50.
Yeah.
Like, he's lived so many lives.
And he's only going to be 35 when he dies. And I know that, like, of course, all the Marauders are young when they die. But Sirius especially, like, especially, I mean, I think it's partially being portrayed by Gary Oldman, who's, like, in his 50s. He definitely seems like such an old figure. But I think Gary Oldman makes sense as a choice because Sirius has aged so much in these multiple lives he's had to live. I mean, 12 years in Azkaban, that's got to give you some wrinkles.
Right. And, I mean, clearly he made the most of his time at Hogwarts, as we just have discussed. But it would almost make more sense if Hagrid was the one who was 33.
Yeah. So true.
And then, like, these guys were, you know, 60 or whatever, mm-hmm. but isn't Hagrid like 70?
He's almost 70 at this point. Well, 50, okay, we've done this math before, but 50 years in Chamber of Secrets, 50 years before that, he was in his fourth year. So he's 65 now.
Okay. So yeah, I almost picture their ages reversed.
Yeah, I think I do too. And also, like, same with, like, Lupin. I know he's always described as looking a lot older than he is. He has, like, gray streaks in his hair and stuff. But, like, mm-hmm. we think about Tonks, who's supposed to be, like, 20, 24, 23, something like that.
Yeah, and I was always kind of like, well, Tonks is with a much older man.
Yeah, but he's really only, like, 10 years older. Like, it's not a huge difference.
Uh-huh.
So it is funny to think about.
Yeah, and... Yeah, it's almost, and it's weird, because then, like, obviously Molly and Arthur, they're older than the Marauders.
Right.
They're probably, like, what do you think, like, at 45 right
now? I'd say, yeah, probably mid-40s, yeah.
They still also had their kids pretty young when you think about Bill and Charlie.
Yeah, because Bill and Charlie are, like, okay, let me think, yeah, I can never do this fast. Bill is 4 years older than Percy, who's 4 years older than Ron, so Bill is 8 years older than Ron and Harry.
Yeah, okay. So... Yeah, I guess we're looking at a similar timeline for when they had kids to James and Lily.
Yeah, so Bill, let's see, Bill is, yeah, he was probably, they were probably like early 20s when they had him.
Crazy.
Yeah, weird. So one thing that's kind of weird is Lupin is telling this story and he's really like rushing through it because Black is watching Scabbers with a horrible sort of hunger on his face. So Lupin's rushing through so much that Harry can't even ask what kind of animal James was.
I know, yeah. He just, it, like, Hermione, doesn't Hermione cut him off?
Yeah, Hermione cuts him off, and she's like, that was dangerous, running around the dark with a werewolf. Yeah, obviously.
Because that's so important to tell them at this point.
Right. I think, I mean, of course we know why Harry's not supposed to learn who or what James's Patronus was, because that's going to become way more important in a couple chapters from now. But it is kind of a weird, like, doesn't really make sense in terms of the dialogue that Lupin wouldn't answer the question.
Or that Lupin wouldn't have just said it from the beginning. Like,
oh, yeah.
And, like... you know, and Sirius became a dog, your dad became a stag, mm-hmm. and Pettigrew became a rat.
Yeah. Like, we did a lot of discussion about Sirius's character as a dog, like, why he is a dog in his animagus form. And obviously James's is pretty obvious, but, like, wouldn't Pettigrew becoming a rat be, like, a pretty good tell back in the day? Like
yeah.
Especially...
Ooh, maybe we need to keep a closer eye on you. We thought you were harmless, but it turns out you're a rat. It's not like you're a mouse. You're a rat.
Right, exactly. Like, A, like, pay attention to him then, and then B, when somebody rats the Potters out, wouldn't you guess it was the rat, not the dog?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
The dog, the most loyal animal, and then the rat, like, the, like, slimiest. Yeah,
like... Who betrayed us? Was it this really sweet dog, or was it the rat?
Yeah, well, Lupin's the only other person who knew about it at this point.
That's true. That's a good point.
Well, and Snape, I guess. Oh, no, Snape only knows about the werewolf thing.
Right. So Snape,
okay, and can I have one more thing I want to say?
Yeah.
How believable do you find it that Dumbledore
had
absolutely zero idea that this was going on?
Well, it doesn't add up, but at the same time, Dumbledore never gives any kind of hint in showing that he knows that Sirius was or is an animagus during this whole time when they're trying to figure out how Sirius is getting into Hogwarts and stuff. So, I mean, we have to believe that Dumbledore really doesn't know. But I guess it doesn't make sense, too.
They were in the Order of the Phoenix. Like, you'd think they would say, okay, well... I can transform into a dog.
Right,
I guess.
It becomes pretty helpful in the fifth book when they're doing Order of the Phoenix stuff.
I guess it is illegal. They're not registered.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like it's like...
I don't see why they wouldn't just go register at this point. When they're 18, like, what's stopping them from
registering? Lupin didn't want to admit that he'd betrayed Dumbledore's trust.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, okay. So we have a few things that are keeping them back, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I agree, though. But it does... Like... I have to believe that Dumbledore really doesn't know, but at the same time, I'm really surprised that he doesn't know.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing with Dumbledore. Like, he is kind of all-knowing, but he's also not a very present headmaster. We hardly ever see him.
Very true. Like, we hardly ever see him, actually.
He's just, like, up in his office or who knows where.
Yeah. Like, off looking for Horcruxes, but not in this book. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, he probably is.
Yeah, this is where he probably thinks starts looking for Horcruxes, because he's seen the diary at this point.
Exactly, so he probably has already started doing those things, but we don't like, pay attention to Dumbledore being missing, because we don't need Dumbledore all the time. Like, Harry's gonna end up needing him in the fifth book. And yeah. I mean, the sixth book. But, yeah, he probably is already looking, or at least doing some research on it. So, I did have a question. Snape shows up pretty soon after this scene, but has he been there the whole time?
It said he was under the invisibility cloak, right?
Right, and there, like, Lupin stops telling the story at one point earlier in the chapter where he hears a loud creak behind them and the bedroom door had opened of its own accord.
That must be when he comes in.
Yeah, but why doesn't he reveal himself earlier? He just waits until they mention his name. Conveniently.
Probably wants to eavesdrop a little bit, I don't know.
I guess, I don't know.
He's like, ooh, this sounds like a good story I haven't heard before.
Yeah.
Might as well get some dirt.
I guess, yeah. It just doesn't seem like Snape's character to just wait, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, so then Lupin's explaining that he never told Dumbledore about Sirius' disguise. He convinced himself that Sirius was getting into the school using dark arts he'd learned from Voldemort. And then he says, in a way, Snape's been right about me all along. Then,
yeah.
So Sirius doesn't know that Snape's a professor at Hogwarts, and which is kind of interesting. I mean, of course he wouldn't know, but it's also Padfoot knew in the Marauder's Map, which is another question of the magic of that.
But yes.
Anyway, we don't need to dwell on that. Then, oh, go ahead.
Well, here's the other thing. If we think about the timeline, then Snape is also only 33, 34.
Yeah.
So, and it kind of feels like he's been a professor forever,
mm-hmm.
but really, like, logically really could have only been a professor for, I would like to say, 10 years.
Well, he has only been a professor for 10 years because, or at the most, because he became a professor after James and Lily's death.
Right. I know. So I'm saying, like, 10 years... but I don't know. Was he there? So I guess he wasn't there the whole time that Bill was at Hogwarts.
Oh, weird. Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah.
Slughorn must have retired around that time, I guess. I don't know.
Uh-huh. It's strange when you put it all into the whole timeline. Like,
very true.
And that's another reason why I'm like, well, why did she have to make them so young?
Yeah. Well, and there hasn't been one defense against the dark arts teacher for that long. ever since like 1980.
Yeah.
Or not 1970 or whatever.
Well, no, even longer though, because it's from when Tom Riddle came and tried to apply.
Yeah, when was that? 1965 or something, around the same time Dumbledore became headmaster.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, whatever. So then Sirius, they start telling this story about when Black almost killed Snape, or when Sirius almost killed Snape, which is a pretty dark side of Sirius. I can kind of actually see why maybe it wasn't so hard for Lupin to believe that Sirius had gone to the dark side
mm-hmm.
after seeing this side of him at Hogwarts.
I agree, yeah, and Sirius does have a dark side, and I'm sure it's partially also the fact that his brother was involved with the Death Eaters.
Of course, yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, like, Snape was clearly involved with the Death Eaters, and Sirius was doing this against Snape, who he hated so much, so you'd think that, like, that would be a clue that Sirius wasn't ever going to go to the dark side. Like,
That's true.
He hates dark wizards.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think... So they tell this story, which one thing that I noticed about this story that was kind of weird or interesting to notice was that... Lupin mentions that Madame Pomfrey is the one who would lead him towards the Whomping Willow every night or every month to transform. So, like,
yes.
Last episode we kind of talked about which teachers may have questioned hiring Professor Lupin as a professor, and you suggested maybe Madame Pomfrey would be worried about the health benefits, or not the health benefits, but the health risks for the students. But I guess she's been around for long enough that she was with him, like, through 7 years of being a student at Hogwarts. So I think she had some good insight into his character, yeah.
It's funny that this comes up, because we had talked about, like, well, was she there when he was there?
Yeah.
And we actually got that answer.
Right.
Because it's not something I remembered, but...
Me neither.
It's funny to picture her leading him toward the Whomping Willow. Like,
I know.
I don't see why, I don't know, he couldn't just walk there himself. It's not like he still has trouble walking.
Yeah, I don't know, it's weird.
I guess they want to make sure he gets there.
Yeah, I guess. So then Sirius told Snape to go and prod the knot on the tree trunk with a long stick so he could go in after Lupin, which is really, like, wow, that's very, very dark to make a student go in after a werewolf.
It doesn't surprise me, though, coming from Sirius. It
doesn't really surprise me either. But James gets cold feet, basically, and decides that they shouldn't do that, so he goes in and saves Snape's life.
Yes.
So then Harry says slowly, "So that's why Snape doesn't like you, because he thought you were in on the joke?"
This is what I mean by, is Harry truly one of the cleverest students of his age?
I think there's a difference.
So that's why Snape doesn't like you.
This is a lot of information all at once. That and a lot of other reasons, Harry. This is a lot of information for Harry to take in at once. He's just trying to connect the dots.
I'm just saying, you'd think the cleverest student of his age would take that information in a little quicker.
Okay, I said he was clever. I didn't say he was the cleverest student of his age.
Yeah, well, but we know that James was supposedly this super clever student. And then we know that Lily was really good, too.
She was really good in potions, at least.
Yeah. Which is, like, Harry's worst subject. It's partially because it's Snape, but...
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think I also would be a little bit slow in this setting. Trying to piece all the pieces together.
Well, Martha, nobody said that you're the cleverest student of your age.
That's true. Nobody said that. So then Snape reveals himself, and his wand is pointing directly at Lupin. Dun, dun, dun. Very...
That's the end of the chapter.
Yeah, which, like, I can see why that's the end of the chapter, but like I said, it was only 8 pages, and we don't really get that much. We get the whole story, and that's it.
Yeah. I know, it's interesting. I guess maybe it makes sense, like, that we want to have this story of the Marauders. It is very important. So, like, to have it isolated as its own chapter, it does make sense, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just so short.
Exactly. But, yeah, I really liked the chapter. I don't know where we should rank it. It's kind of a weird one in terms of figuring out where it goes in the rankings. But what were you thinking?
I think it would be relatively high just because we do get so many, so much information revealed.
Uh-huh. I think if I were going to compare this chapter to any chapter that we've read so far in this book, I would say it's similar to Professor Trelawney's prediction, which is also kind of a... in the middle chapter, like, kind of leading up to a rising action chapter. And I do think this one's better than that one, because I think that one is... We get more questions answered in this one than we do in that one, and not that that's a determiner of whether it's a good chapter or not, but Professor Trelawney's prediction kind of has a lot of stuff that's leading up to stuff, but it doesn't actually answer any questions. So I think maybe we
should... No, I agree. I like this better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good chapter. So I would put it maybe, right above Professor Trelawney's prediction. That puts it right below Snape's grudge.
Yeah.
Which I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's fitting. And that's 5th place, which is very high. I mean, 5th out of 18. Can't do much worse than that. So, especially for such a short chapter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, this was 8 pages, and it was a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of information.
Yeah, I think what's good about it is it's one long scene in one short chapter. It's like most chapters have 3 or 4 scenes. This one has one scene that's just very, very important and detailed.
Right. Well, Martha, we know you don't like it when there's a bunch of little short scenes.
No, I really don't. So I'm glad, I'm glad to see that this one is just a very long, detailed scene. So as far as Real Weirdo goes, what are you thinking on that front?
So it's hard because I kind of feel like it should be Lupin again.
I know. I think I have kind of a maybe unorthodox suggestion, which would be Dumbledore. I know he's not actually in the chapter, but in the story, he definitely is the hero of the story by letting Lupin come into school and... giving him so many easy ways to, or not easy ways, but giving him so many opportunities at Hogwarts. No other headmaster would have let Lupin in. And I mean, Lupin, he doesn't do anything in the chapter except for tell the story. So I think I'd rather give the Real Weirdo to somebody in the story than somebody telling the story.
I don't know, though. Here's my thing with Lupin. He's only had it twice this book, and I feel like he deserves it more. And in this, it's not just that he's telling the story. He's also, like, the one who's kind of keeping Sirius in check. Like, without Lupin here, Sirius would be... would have already sliced Pettigrew's throat. I guess that's would have been a good thing, but...
Yeah, but I think... Like, I know we've said he got it twice, and that's not that many times, but we don't try to give the real weirdo away even more than once. Like, we... You're supposed to be just one... I don't know. I feel
like... You think this is going to be Dumbledore's best moment of the book?
He's not even in the rest of the... Well, he makes them do the time turner, but, like... I don't know.
He gives Harry and Hermione counsel later on. I feel like that would be better.
Okay. I guess we can give it to Lupin, but three times is a lot. And I bet he's going to get it another time this book.
When he turns into a werewolf?
I don't know. Maybe. Later on, when he decides to step down, I think.
Maybe we should give it to Snape for showing up and not revealing himself for a few minutes so he could get some info.
Oh, great idea. Let's just give it to Snape. No, I think, I don't know. I guess we can give it to Lupin, but I'm just kind of, like, he's fine in the chapter. It's not like he's...
Well, that's the thing, there's no real standout.
We can give it to Scabbers for being, feeling like a piglet.
We made a vow that we would never give it to Peter Pettigrew.
I don't think we made a vow, we just thought that we wouldn't want to.
Maybe this should be our last hurrah for Scabbers.
Yeah, because this is the last time he's going to be Scabbers.
That's true. After this, we're never going to see him as Scabbers again.
And he's kind of cute in the chapter. Like, he's squealing like a piglet.
That's not cute.
You didn't like my... You didn't think it was cute when I did that?
I wouldn't say cute.
Well, I thought I was pretty cute in that moment, but maybe that was just me.
Probably a safe assumption.
Okay, well, moving on. Are we going to give it to Scabbers?
I think so.
Okay, I'm surprised you came around on that idea so quickly.
Well, he provided some comic relief, and he was able to become an animagus, even though he's kind of a Dumbo.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point, yeah. So let's give it to him.
Okay. I feel kind of dirty doing that, but...
I think it's good. I think he deserves it. And we gave it to Crookshanks last chapter, and people have accused us of being too on Crookshanks' side, so...
That's true. This balances it out.
Yeah. So, yeah, Scabbers, congrats, bud.
Don't tell him that. That makes me feel gross.
When he hears that he's the real weirdo, this is the sound he makes. No, that wasn't... It's different.
Do it again.
No.
That sounds weird. That sounds like a bird. Yeah. I think your first time was your best.
What did I do, though? It was like... No.
That was pretty good.
Okay, well, Scabbers is squealing with delight the being awarded the real weirdo.
Like a little pig.
Yeah. Just as a reminder, you can find those lists of chapter rankings and real weirdos on our website, realweirdsisters.com. Of course, we'd love it if you'd like us on Facebook. We've gotten quite a few new Facebook likes lately. We're almost to 500 likes, which, well, not really almost, but, like, kind of close. So it'd be great if we could get more Facebook likes at our Facebook page, facebook.com/realweirdsisters, and follow us on Twitter @realweirdsister to keep up with us and ask us any questions you may have or give us any suggestions, tell us what we're doing wrong, stuff like that. Of course, what we'd love the most, though, is if you'd hop on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and review. We have one today from a proud Hufflepuff who says the review is long overdue. He or she writes, "I've been listening to this podcast since the summer, and it's fantastic. I started binge listening to it right after I finished rereading the whole series. I wanted more Harry Potter without necessarily reading it all over again. Just as I learn or discover something new every time I read the books, I love listening to Martha and Alice's takes on and about moments and characters that are so familiar to me. Whether I agree with their perspective or not, I find myself talking back to them every Monday morning during my commute and wishing I could listen to a new chapter every day. I highly recommend the show." Well, thank you, proud Hufflepuff.
Yeah, really nice review. I want to say I hope that this proud Hufflepuff, when they're commuting, they're in a situation by themselves if they're talking back to us. Otherwise, like if they're sitting on like a train or a bus or something, it might look a little bit crazy, but.
Well, maybe she or he does not care whether they look crazy, which is awesome.
That's true.
They're just a real weirdo. And I would like to say 10 points to Hufflepuff for writing that review.
Definitely.
And Hufflepuff being one of our favorite houses.
One of our top three.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely one of our top three. So thanks for that review, and thank you to all who have written reviews. We are getting closer and closer to that 100 rating or 100 reviews goal, but we're still not there yet. So if you haven't already, we'd love it if you would do that for us, and we'll read it on the show. So what's not to love about it? We'll be back next week to talk about Chapter 19, The Servant of Lord Voldemort, which I'm pretty excited about. Maybe we will actually get into the meat of this book, quote-unquote, because we've been leading up to this for the entire time that we've been in our Book 3 discussions. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, me too, definitely.
And of course, just as a reminder, we'd love it if you'd check out our Patreon page just to consider supporting us financially. You can go to our webpage, realweirdsisters.com, and click on the tab, become a patron there. Or you can also go to patreon.com/realweirdsisters. Yeah, we just really appreciate your consideration. We're really excited for launching this and seeing how it goes in the future. But of course, we just appreciate your being a member of the Real Weird Sisters audience and listening to us week to week rambling about Harry Potter. So thanks so much for listening today, and thanks for considering becoming a patron as well. We will be back next week with another book club episode talking about The Servant of Lord Voldemort. And until then, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Please stand up.